This is the Saturday Night Live Friday speaker meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous held at Westgate West in San Jose, California on May 26, 2000. Our speaker is Jim B. of San Jose, California. The original recording of this meeting is kept in the SNL tape library. Please observe the tradition of Alcoholics Anonymous and do not play this recording for commercial or entertainment purposes. Please do not break the anonymity of the speakers or any other AA member at the public level. Thank you.
Thank you. Did you write that down? My name's Jim Bayard. I'm an alcoholic. Glad to be here, sober, safe, and relatively sane. I had one of my great days today. I woke up early today thinking, bad. And went out and spent more money than I have on clothes. I like shopping when I'm not feeling too good. And so I went and shopped. I do that pretty good. I'm a compulsive buyer. You know, I left a long time ago. Hey, see, they like that too. A long time ago, I was living in my sponsor's house when me and Peppermint split up. Got divorced. God, there ain't but a handful of people that knew Peppermint. Anyway, one of my favorite ex-wife. When we split up, I moved into my sponsor's house. And he was there for a month before he moved to Seattle. And one morning I left the house in a year-old Toyota and came back in a brand-new Charger. And that's how I buy things. You know, I just show up and buy things. And I try to not do that much anymore because I don't work. That's really exciting when you don't work and they give you a credit card. I'm just amazed. I said, run it quick. You know, they may not catch it. I like the couple with the hats. That's neat. I'm glad you're here. McCracken was supposed to be here tonight. He's in L.A. this afternoon. And I usually want him in a meeting to watch my back. But he's my ex-Navy SEAL. I usually have him come to meetings with me when I speak and have his chucks with him. Because I don't mean to do it, but sometimes I upset people. I really don't mean it. So I'll tell you right now, you know, forgive me. I know not what I do. You got to know one thing, though, before I've done that I love AA. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. How do you thank Alcoholics Anonymous for your life? That's all I've gotten here. You know, how do you thank for every living thing I know and do? I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah. I mean, I'll probably talk till about 10 o'clock and I don't have to swear. That was my native tongue when I got to AA, profanity. I was bilingual. I knew some English in fluent street, you know. I learned all that drunk stuff. I learned all kinds of, I was thinking about a couple of days ago, I learned these survival techniques at a young age. I learned how to survive because when you grow up in a home like I grew up, you just got to survive. You got to survive all that crap. I got a drunken father and a martyr mother and flesh it and flesh and furniture break in. 6, 7 years old, I got a knife with me in case he comes up tonight. You know, and you ain't supposed to live like that. I figured that out watching Father Knows Best. Just, you know, little kids ain't supposed to live like that. And so I grew up terrified. Terrified of things I didn't even know about. I learned fear at an early age. I've got a 3-year-old grandson. That little guy, I took him to the fair last weekend, and he doesn't know fear. Doesn't know fear. And I don't want to teach him. That's something that's taught. I don't think we're born with it. And some fear is healthy. Big book talks about 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. But it's a taught thing. I learned it easily. I learned it real good. I started drinking as an altar boy when I was like 11, drinking the priest's wine. And I like white wine, you know, Mad Dog. I like better stuff in the end. I I drank a little too much wine one day. I got overserved before the 6 a.m. Mass, and they fired me as an altar boy. And that started a long succession of failures in my life. A day later, I got fired as captain of the traffic squad, Sister Michael Marie. And she fired me, and she spent the last 7 or 8 years of her life in AA, and I got to get even with her. You know, I made her do things she didn't like doing. And I made her 12 steps from sick women, and I sent her on her way, you know, just sick, sick, sick people. And that's the only way I could get even with my nun, you know. And I just loved that lady, and she died of cancer, Jesus, 8 or 9 years ago now. I have a sobriety date. It's 11th of November, 1970. I think that's about the most important thing I can tell you. That AA works really good for 29 years, 7 months, and 2 weeks. It just works really good. I don't know about anything else. I'm going down to celebrate my sponsor's 39th birthday next week, a week from Sunday. He's 39 years out of the penitentiary, so he knows it worked for 39 years. I have a tie and coat on tonight because my sponsor will have one on when he speaks in San Diego tomorrow night. One time I chaired a meeting here and didn't have a tie on, and somebody gave me up. My sponsor was in town the next week, and somebody gave me up, and I said, well, it's just Saturday Night Live. And he said, well, you're an AA member. He's mean, my sponsor. But I went off, got into public school out of this little grammar school. You know, you graduate when you're in the eighth grade, and I was somebody. And then I got into high school, public high school, and I was nobody again. It's hard on a kid that has nothing going for himself, you know. And there you are, you're just a young little puke in everybody's way again. And I made it through high school because I drank. They had the damnedest thing there at Willow Glen High School, born and raised San Jose. But at Willow Glen High School, it was the damnedest thing. They wanted you to be there. I couldn't do that. I just couldn't do that on a daily basis. And I'd kind of think about it on the way through. I was on my way to the east side where they want to drink like I like to drink. You know, I partied with a gang of people at Overfelt. Most of them are dead today. There's one guy that's, he's just about a vegetable now. So I just had a lot of fun in high school and got drunk, stole cars, went to jail. We got into a deal for a while to steal cars and roll them. They were all, you know, they were not no nice cars. They were all garbage cars. But we'd steal them and roll them out of the field behind Overfelt High School. And just having a wonderful time. I found Bally High and Fisher Beer. You know, just a class act. Just a class act. The fine wines. And was starting out there as an altar boy drinking that holy wine. See, every time I drank wine, I'd puke. And I just tell myself this time will be different, just like was read today. In more about alcoholism. This time's going to be different. You know, I'm just not going to puke tonight. You know, but it was nice drinking shit like that Bally High. You know, you could puke in Technicolor, which is great. It was just, you know, and I like booze. I love booze. I love everything about booze. I love drinking it and puking it. I just loved it all. You know, and, God, I 1963. I was 17 years old. I borrowed a car at Mary Oldsmobile, and they didn't know I had it. And I'm so slick, I kept it for 3 days. Because I was nice driving a new car. I liked that. It was fun. I parked it down the block, you know, and that was cool. And the police got me because they're trained to get me. They get people like us. They learn. I mean, I got a guy that's going to cop school. And in cop school, they teach you how to find jackasses. That's just what happens, you know. And so they captured me. They was always capturing me. And the only detox I knew prior to coming to AA was jail. And just puke. I love puking in cop cars. Just, they get awful upset. They just, you know, we got Ranger Bob here today. He probably gets a drunk now and then. And somebody puke in his truck. They're just, you know, you got to be cool when you're out there. So anyway, I I borrowed this car. They didn't know I had it. They called it Grand Theft Auto. And went before the magistrate and over on Guadalupe Parkway. And they told me I was going into the service or youth authority. And I made another one of my grave tactical errors. I went in the military. And, you know, they just, Uncle Sam wants you. It's nice to be needed. So I went into the service. And with my juvenile record, I had a long juvenile record. I'd been on probation since I was 12. And I was never just bad enough. You know, I just never could just quite make prison. I was an almost, you know. And I just thought an almost is better than being a never was, you know. Being almost was pretty good. But I just couldn't quite do the good crime, you know. I mean, I just stopped. So I went in the military, but I had already seen the movies. And I didn't like the Navy uniform. I'd already seen the movies, so the Army and Marine Corps are out. And I liked the Air Force uniform. And so I had a cousin who was a lieutenant on the San Jose PD. He misplaced my juvenile record. And I got into the Air Force. And I told him, you know, I gave him the story. You guys know the story if you're alcoholic. I don't know if we got any Al-Anons here. I don't feel it. usually feel it. I talked at a meeting down in the desert a few weeks ago, and there was 21 newcomers. I loved it. And then 5 Al-Anons. I had a great time. And I had the Al-Anons making amends to me after the meeting. You know, I'm good. I had a good time. If it wasn't for us, they would have no place to go, you know. And I have to remind them when I see them, you know. I know some great Al-Anons. So I went in the military, and they made me a cop. And I treated my military career as a joke. Went to Korea. They told me I'd see the world. They promised me Europe. And they sent me to Korea. And I was a sentry dog handler, and that's a good job for a drunk. Because the sergeant couldn't get close enough to me to find out what kind of blood alcohol I got, because my dog didn't like him. And I saw to that. And he was a great little dog. He just go like this, and he jumps. And it just jumped. Great job. Great job for a drunk. And I trained him how to alert on trucks, you know, so when the sergeant would come around, he'd wake me up. So you were secure, you know, Korea was secure. Tell you what I really resented about Korea, being that I drink like I drink at opportune times. I don't know how many alcoholics here drink at inopportune times, but I used to do that, and I drink when drinking, not drinking would be a better idea. See, like when you're supposed to be at work. And so I had a problem with rank in the service. I never got any. But the good thing about an alcoholic, see, an alcoholic will work his ass off 3 days a week trying to catch up, you know. So they thought they liked me those 3 days a week, but I just couldn't keep going. I couldn't finish nothing. And so anyway, I did my Korea for a year. What I really resented about it is it got so cold they took all the dogs off the post. And since I was an airman nothing, they put me on the Alpha site way the hell off the base. And it snowed, and the road got, it was cold. God, it was cold. They barred up the POL building where I'd go in and sit there with my dog all night, you know, and sleep. And they had that barred up, and I had to be outside, and I was by myself, and I was in bad company. I didn't even know that then, but I resented it, and they were like 4 hours late picking me up. And it was some kind of munitions. I never could figure it out with the hell they did out there, but that's what I did. I came back to the States, and that didn't last long. I didn't care much for stateside duty, and a shipment came up to Vietnam, and I asked the captain if I could go, being that I didn't have any stripes, and they wanted somebody with 2 or 3 stripes, but they sent me. They were glad to get rid of me. When I went down to Palm Springs a couple of weeks ago, I thought about George Air Force Base out there in the desert where I was, and what a nightmare that was for about a minute. So they were glad to send me, and I went to Vietnam. And I did such a good job, I stayed 2 years. Just they're playing my music. Hit her! How dare you look at me in that tone of voice? And that's not politically correct anymore, is it? Don't hit her. That's not good. OJ screwed that up. But anyway, Joe shaking his head. He didn't say that. Well, he really didn't. So anyway, I did Vietnam, and I stayed an extra year because it sounded like a good idea at the time. The good part of that is they fired me as a cop because I got taken drunk one night. And I was supposed to be at work at 10 p.m., working 12 and 12, and 12 on expanded security stuff, and they were coming. And they kept coming. There's nothing we could do about it. They just, them little bastards just kept showing up, you know. I still have a problem with, I was sponsored one of them for a minute, but that was kind of God's sense of humor. I had this little Vietnamese guy that was at the Kaiser program, and he was calling me every day, just like I told him. My sponsor demands that I sponsor a new guy and tell him to call me every day. I hate that, but he tells me to do it that way. And so this little Vietnamese guy was calling me every day. And he didn't even know I don't like him. It's great. That's what God does. See, God is a trip, you know. And he quit calling. I hope he's not dead. Or he doesn't, you know, kill somebody on the highway that I know. The alcoholics do that. They finally sentenced the guy to kill the highway patrolman a couple years ago to second-degree murder. So if you're in this room and you're newly sober or you've been sober a little while and you're thinking, don't drink. Don't drink. They're going to get you. They're going to get you. So don't drink, by God. But I went into the commander's office, 11 o'clock or so. It dawned on me I'm supposed to be at work. And this major guy was always in his office. I just couldn't stand him. He just dumb guy. And I had a problem with authority. And I said, Major, I threw my ID card and my dog tags on his desk. I don't know how many of you people are ex-military, but I threw my ID card and dog tags on his desk. And I said, Major, you son of a bitch, I quit. Now, that sounded like a good idea. And he didn't think so, and I was on the next plane smoking over to Cameron, and I did, he sent me to the nut house for 3 days. They kept me 3 weeks because I was special. And I was drunk every day, and I knew all the guys at the air police there. They had their own club, blah, blah, blah. So an alcoholic, the book test says we can go get drunk on a Greenland ice cap. You know, it doesn't matter. I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to find it. You know, if I got to smoke it, snort it, geeze it, I don't care what I got to do. I'm going to find it. I'm going to find something that'll make me see double and feel single. That's just the way it is. I just don't like here. Yeah, I have a problem with here. So I went on my merry way. I stayed there that extra year. I went to Phan Rang, and when I was at Phan Rang, and they kicked me out of the air police, they put me into supply. I'm in heaven. They put a drunken thief in supply. And then the guy, this colonel, he said, you know how to drive a truck? Because whenever he wanted his paperwork, I was chasing Vietnamese around in the yard with a big forklift. And them yelling at me. Just fun. Because I didn't, I was busy, yeah. And I was always quick. Colonel said, you know, I drive a truck? Hell yeah. I never drove a truck in my life. I just retired in 96 as a truck driver. So, bad news. Could have retired as a cop. I almost got into the cops. I might get into that. But I spent the last year being the supply officer for the 101st Airborne, the Korean Marines, and the Rock Marines. The Korean Marines and the Australian Marines, whatever they wanted, I got for them. And I got everything I wanted. I had NCOs coming to me for booze. It was great. I had a great time. And I got out of the military when you do what I do, you know. And I got an honorable discharge. convenience of the government. A lot of alcoholics get out convenience of the government. That's what my discharge paper said. And I got out in the world, and I'm going to make something of myself. And I found her. And her was this little, little lady, Kevin's mother. I don't know why I saw her look at the bell. I saw her kid today, her baby today, and her father. And she's graduating from college tomorrow, by the way. That Val, that pretty one over there, she's next to Pretty Barbara and all them other girls. Anyway, she's graduating from San Jose State tomorrow, and that's pretty good for a munchkin. You know, I'm really proud of her. And I found Pat. Your mom brought her home, so that's got to be her. And so we started the Dance of Death, and it was wonderful. And we were married for 9 months and one kid. And I saw Johnny's cap. He was conceived somewhere in Texas. I figured it out about maybe 10 years ago where I went wrong, because he's a Dallas Cowboy fan. And I could never figure out where I went wrong until it dawned on me. He must have been conceived somewhere in Texas, because when I was leaving California in her car with her and my little, she got pregnant in Texas somewhere, and she had a little Corvair. It was cute. And I ruined that. We moved back to Arkansas. That's funny. But we moved back to Arkansas to save my marriage, you know, get rid of all the dope fiends here in California. And because I used to take some non-habit-forming heroin. Smoke some of that non-habit-forming marijuana. And take a little when I was down too far, I'd have to go back up. It was just a hell of a mess. I was a chemist without a degree. And I got involved with a couple of guys, and we got involved in selling some high-powered sedatives, the book called them. And my attorney, who I saw this week, that was 31 years ago, and my attorney suggested, he told me, I can't legally tell you this, but as your lawyer, I'd suggest you leave the state. There was some people in suits like I got on with, only they were just really, there were some people looking for me in the damnedest places, and they had little bulges in their coats, and so he figured I should leave, because the Federal Narcotics Bureau wanted to talk to me, and I didn't want to talk to them. We had nothing to discuss. And so I left the state. My wife got pregnant somewhere in Texas. We moved to Arkansas. I joined the American Legion, being a veteran, so I could drink on weekends, on Sundays. Sundays, it was a dry county on Sundays in Little Rock. And so I joined the American Legion, and she finally insisted that I go to work. She was running out of money. So I went and got a job, and I celebrated that day, and when I went to work the next day, I forgot where I was supposed to go, and she left with some other stuff going on, and I knocked her across the room, and she was 3 months pregnant. I'm not proud of that, but that's just the way I did things back then. How dare you look at me in that tone of voice, smack, you know, and she got even. She was mean, hurt me deeply. But she came out here, came back to California. Her mommy sent her the money that day she was gone. You know, I came back pleasantly gassed that evening, and the place is vacant. And I've done that numerous times. I came back here to California like 2 weeks before Kevin was born, and because I was going to be a daddy now. And I knew I wasn't going to be a daddy like my daddy. I hated my daddy. I was sure of it. I just positive that, you know, I'm going to get a job now, and I'm going to do the deal. And I tried to convince her, and she wasn't hearing none of it. And I took a drink. And he was born like early in the morning. Really, you know, he's always been pain in the ass, and he was cute when he was little, though. But he was born like 4 o'clock in the morning. I went to the hospital drunk, and we got back together for, I promised her I'd never drink again, and I believe it lasted 2 days. And my matching Safeway shopping bags were packed in on the porch. I just went out for a quart of milk. Give me a break, you know. One more chance. And she didn't want to hear it. So I moved on, and that's when in 1969 ended up. I did 6 months in Elmwood. I did 9 months, sentenced to six. I did nine because I was a model prisoner. And then Soppy knows, you know. And so I was a model prisoner and did a lecture. And my lawyer got me work furlough. And it's the same lawyer I've had till today. You know, right now I got the same guy, Ernie Miller. He's a great guy. I trust him with my life. And, you know, he's not even a criminal attorney. But he just liked me for some reason. And he just kept me out of prison. And we just had a wonderful relationship. And we have a better one today because I pay him. God, he's cost me about $1,500 for the divorce so far, and my present divorce, my present ex-wife. And so anyway, I'm doing the Dance of Death. And just last Monday, I was at the Signs of Sobriety group on second in St. John. And after the meeting, I was walking over to my car, and my replacement was on my grass, passed out. You know, that's where I ended up. I ended up at St. James Park. I couldn't get off First Street unless the police took me to Milpitas. And I saw that guy last Monday night, and it kind of, I just really got grateful. I mean, I was him. Some guy asked me, Dave, I think it was, asked me if I'd knew his father, who was on Skid Row with me in that period of time, but I didn't know anybody. He was old, so I knew I stole his booze. You know, the winos didn't want to drink with me when I had the bottle. Kind of drunk I am. I'm just mean. Fortunately, with my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous, I lost all macho. You know, I came in here all macho, and I lost it. And this guy Damon, said today he was going to get a haircut. And I thought, Jesus, we'll put it on the calendar. But there he is. I'm proud of the boy. I knew someday, you know, when he stays sober, one day he'll cut the hair. Anyway, when I was new, I cut my hair. But I got off Skid Row when I found her. I found her in 1970, somewhere around July or August. It was hot, and you know, when you keep puking on yourself and you don't have a control over your bodily functions, it gets kind of funky out there. And so I found her, and I moved over to Los Gatos to this little dumpy little house on Harwood, and we were doing the deal there for a while and just having a wonderful time. And she had a welfare check, so I was happy. She is going to the psychiatrist that the county was paying for. And the psychiatrist sent her to that A&A thing. And if you, those of you that are old enough, remember 1970, A&A wasn't all that popular. You know, Betty Ford hadn't got here yet. And it wasn't fashionable to be sober yet. And so anyway, she went to that A&A thing in about October 1970. And she told them all about me. And they'd say, well, if he lives, we'll get him. And so, you know, if you be alcoholic, we'll get him. So, if you're here and you want to drink again, we'll get you. We'll get you back. You'll think of me. You'll remember me. That's happened before, by the way. Some guy will come back to, hey, I remembered you. And it was good. Yeah, wonderful. If it helps. Then, but on Halloween night in 1970, she told me the magic words, quit drinking or get the hell out. And it wasn't in those nice of terms. And so I went to A&A. And I parked my alcoholic 57 Plymouth. And alcoholic cars are interesting. You see them where newcomers are. And they're a little narrower than they were when they left the factory, you know. And they usually have one headlight hanging down. So, you know, when you're almost out, your lane's on the bottom, you know. And so I parked my alcoholic 57 Plymouth next to a brand-new 71 Cadillac. And walked into that meeting. And a guy named John Fisher met me at the door in a blue suit, similar to what I got on tonight. I only knew that lawyers had suits. And I listened in that first meeting, and what I heard was, if you want what we have, and I wanted that Cadillac and that fine suit of threads. I didn't know about anything else. I wasn't really, didn't need much else. I thought a new suit, should I go out and play some kind of game? And that long hair and a beard, I was cute. I came back to another meeting. You know, it's the first place I'd been outside Elmwood where they said, keep coming back. And, you know, and I had my work furlough. But I came to more meetings, and I'd be pleasantly gassed. I wasn't drunk because I was supposed to learn how to drink. That's what A&A was. I was 24 years old, for Christ's sake. I'm too young to be an alcoholic. Those people are all old. They're like 40. You know what I mean? And they're old people. And if I get that old, I'll quit, you know. Because I've got some more fun to go. I've had a lot of fun. You know, I've never had a period of social drinking. The only social drinking I know in my life is that 10 days that I was going to AA meetings. Because I'd only have 4 or 5 beers to go to a meeting. If you're doing that, you can quit now. The party in your honor's over. That's just the way it is. And I'd go to those meetings pleasantly gassed and chew a whole pack of gum like they don't know what I'm doing and listen to more crap. And I heard this little Eddie, a guy named Eddie T, talk. And he was an old vaudevillian. I mean, he was dirt old, just old. And he was in vaudeville. He was the funniest man, First World War. He was in the Popular War, you know. And he was funny. And I just laughed so hard my stomach ached. It had been years since I'd laughed. I don't remember the last time I'd laughed like that. And it was just A&A. You know. And then on the 10th of November of 1970, I forgot to go to work. And I got taken drunk. And I was teaching this kid about 10 o'clock at night. I'm teaching a kid that I grew up with. It was his 21st birthday. And I was teaching him at the 4th Street Bowling Alley. I was teaching him how to drink. And you know, that misguided son of a bitch still don't know how to drink after all these years. You know, I saw him about 2 years ago, and his wife's happy. The kids are grown up and in college, you know, and the dog's happy. And the guy still don't know how to drink. I'm ashamed I know him. Just ashamed of him. He's never been to jail. He's never had any fun. You know, he just packed his gear all his life, you know. But I tried to help the boy. I was teaching him how to drink, and then at 10 o'clock that night on the 10th of November, I got kicked out of a Teamsters Union meeting. And the president of the Teamsters Union said, Bayard, you're just like your old man. Get the hell out of here. And I hated my old man. I grew up hating my old man. And he said I was just like him. My dad was a union drunk for years. And God's been real good to me. That was my last drink. 10 o'clock at night, 10th of November, 1970. That was a long time ago. That was before some of you were around. And before any of you wanted to get sober, probably. Except Johnny. And I came to a meeting on the 11th of November, hungover like a dog. And I've never forgot that day. I've never forgot it. I looked at myself in the mirror and I said, self, if you'd have gone to a meeting last night, you wouldn't have felt like this. You know, because all my drinking life and all the time up till today, I was always Catholic. You know, just they teach you this crap about guilt and stuff. And so I was always guilty. And now I think I got a shot. I think I got a shot to do something. I didn't know what. So I got, I went to a meeting that day and announced myself as an alcoholic. Of course, then I was different. I was a dope fiend and an alcoholic. Because it makes addicts sound kind of candy ass, you know. But I was a dope fiend. There ain't too many dope fiends left in the world. They're all dead or in AA. So, but my life started on the 11th of November, 1970. That's the day that Bill Wilson went on his last drunk. Because In 1935, these two guys got together. These two guys got together and, like Les said today, a couple of white dead white dudes got together. We got AA today, you know. There's some of us are going to the international conference in Minneapolis next month. 60,000-70,000 sober alcoholics. You know, I got me a room at the Radisson across the street, so I don't miss nothing. You know, it's amazing. 1990, Russia was there for the first time. The Union of Soviet Socialist Republic. There was the international conference for the first time, and you could cut it with a knife when they came up with their flag of Soviet Union. You know, they walked up right before our flag. 50,000 people in Seattle just tore the roof off the sucker. I get chilled thinking about it. I learned some Russian that year, and I used it on new guys. I met up with some Russian people that speak English. They taught me some Russian. Tufsky Shitsky. So you could use that on a newcomer. I was using it tonight, you know. And the things you learn in AA, you know, like Bob and all the people that are new here, you know, the things that you learn. I sometimes kind of envy new people. Very seldom, but sometimes I think about some of the changes, and I sponsor guys that are going through crap that I've been through. And I know it's going to be all right, baby. You know, that's what I know. That's what I know. My life, you know, my life started on my sobriety date, and I ain't stopped yet. I've had an interesting life. I didn't lose anything but the wife drunk when I was drunk. A lot of people lose a lot of stuff drunk. I never had nothing. When you're living on the streets, you don't get stuff. I didn't have stuff to lose. I've lost a lot of stuff sober. I had this piece of crap steal my house in 92. I mean, this gentleman. Anyway, I had a guy embezzle me in a business in 1982. He can't come back to California if he's still alive. Last I heard, he was up in Spokane somewhere at an Alano Club guru. And his ex-wife is in Hawaii. When I found out I was sober longer, she changed her sobriety date, and I found out I was sober longer than that son of a bitch. And I don't resent him. I just pray that he dies and goes to heaven soon. We had a great business. We had a prison business going, and the name, if anybody here besides Steve is an ex-con, any of you guys are really macho. We, strange-looking big guys named Bubba are going to places like that. But, I don't know what brought that on. I just but anyway, we had a business in Soledad and San Quentin, and the name of the company was Joe Mama Incorporated. And I was just having a ball, and one day the bank account was gone, and so was my partner. I had a spiritual experience. I think I got screwed, and I did. I in 1971, in 69 when I got out of Elmwood, I joined the Teamsters Union because my probation officer decided I should get a job, and I didn't think it was such a good idea. But I got this job where I worked a day at a time. So when I got to AA, I knew all about a day at a time, and I worked one or two days a week, depending on if I needed to shower. Before I got sober. But my first sponsor was a guy named Norm Matthews. Sponsorship is important in AA. There's four or five guys here that I sponsor tonight, and three guys here that there should be 10 or 12, but there's only three of them came tonight. My first sponsor was a guy named Norm Matthews. And Norm taught me everything I need to know up to and including today to stay sober forever. And I've been doing it for 29 and a half years. Norm quit doing it when I had 6 months. He got drunk. See, I'm talking to some people at dinner tonight. We just don't do the deal yesterday. I just can't do the deal yesterday and plan on staying sober today. I got to keep doing it. You know, I got to keep doing it till they pat me on the face with dirt. Yeah, I got to keep doing this deal. I can't stay sober for what I did last year. Memorial Day weekend, 89 and 90, I made them put on a Saturday Night Live convention, the first annual and the last annual. And then I got off the steering committee and they shook hand my convention, you know. And it was all self-supporting and we had a party. And Mickey, our taper, just found the tapes from those conventions and just really neato stuff, you know. I had a hell of a time getting this goddamn group to accept that we were going to have a convention whether they wanted one or not. Because I was the events coordinator, and the big book says great events will come to pass. And so I just woke up one morning in February and decided that we should have a conference. And I went and put it together while I was still arguing with the steering committee. I mean, I have no problem with getting what I want. Yeah. And the conventions came off and they were a success. And everybody that, you know, there's a group of men that put in some money to put it off, to get it off for the hotel and all that stuff. And it happened. You know, and I'm staying at the LeBaron suite. And that's cool. That's not bad, but I could see Skid Row from there. You know, and you can't get there from there. And so I'm in this hotel suite with this lovely lady, and we just had a convention. In 1990, they put us in a tent. They overbooked the hotel. Now, had we been Pac Bell or AT&T or Microsoft or something, we'd have sued them, but we were AA, so they put us in a tent. Because they had some Mexican thing going on in our room on Saturday night. And we had a live band. We had Jimmy Williams from Aledo, Texas. He was speaking, and we had a revival, baby. You know, we turned that place on. And it was kind of a night where, you know, you'd expect Wallace Beery to come out, and most of you don't know who Wallace Beery was. Anyway, you'd expect something coming down, you know, just kind of a eerie night, you know. And we had a band going on, a live band, because we don't mess around in us Alkies when we're having fun. And about 10 o'clock at night, the police showed up, about 13 squad cars in. And every now and then, this guy's sponsor, Bill Charlson, reminds me of it. Because he saw me outside in a tuxedo talking to cops. It just knocked his socks off. He just thought that was the greatest thing since popcorn. And I promised the police we'd shut down at 11. I lied. Yeah. And we went on till 2 in the morning, and it was just a wonderful time. Anyway, Greer and I, back with sponsorship with Norm. When Norm got drunk, they told me to get another sponsor. Oh, okay. So I got Harvey Warren. And then I got married. Because they told me not to. You know them. You know them, those old people, you know, the 40-year-olds. And they told me not to get married, and so we got married on the 29th of December. That's one of two marriage dates that I remember. The first one, or the second one, and the last one. And so we got married, and I showed them, hung in there for 3 years. But I got another sponsor, and his name was Harvey. And Harvey Warren, if Harvey Warren, when I was 6 months sober, died of, he had open heart surgery and didn't make it. I'm hard on sponsors. And he was a great guy, but if he'd have lived, I'd have died. Because he just loved me. Harvey just loved me. He was just a gentle man. You know, and I could just tell him anything. And he'd tell me stupid things like he loved me. And I tried to stop that, you know. And God, I just don't do that. And Harvey was just Harvey. And then I made a grave tactical error. I made one of them decisions based on self. And after Harvey, when he was sick and he died, I was going over to this guy's house a lot. His name was Jack Clements. And some of you met Jack. And Jack was big, mean dude. You know what I mean? He was ex-special forces. You know, he was over in Vietnam when we weren't there. And you remember, if you're that my age or around there. There was a few years in the 50s we weren't supposed to be there. And we were there, and Jack was over there then, and he was mean. I wouldn't mess with him if he had polio, okay? And both arms in a cast, tied behind him. So I was afraid of the guy. But he's the first man in my life that I trusted with my life. And that's important if you have a sponsor. Or that you are a sponsor to somebody else. I better trust my sponsor with my life, because one day it might mean my life. And if you're new, that might not be important to you right now. But by God, if you don't trust someone with your life, it might mean your life. Somebody that you can tell all their secrets to. Somebody, there's a pamphlet, I don't know if we got it here, but the Members Eye View, my favorite pamphlet, written by a guy named Alan McGinnis. It was a talk he gave to the American Medical Association. And in that talk, he said that from the birth to the grave, every human being must find at least one other human being he could stand before naked, stripped of all pretense or defense. And I had them all. I had all them defenses just built in. You know, I'm good. Scorpio of my type. But you got to stand before somebody stripped of all defense, and trust that person not to hurt you. And Jack Clements was the first man for me. He was like Dad. He was like my father, and he was strict. And he loved me. Still does. He loved me in my ugliness. He's just kind of guy that I'd go to him after I screwed up, and he said, "No, you don't do it that way." When I got here, I knew some English and fluent street, and I'd pontificate when these old ladies were in meetings, you know, and I'd say things like mother, and mother ran in and out of my vocabulary all the time, and I'd just see if I can gross these old ladies out, and it usually worked, you know, and they'd pat me on the ass after the meeting, tell me, "Keep coming back, ha ha, gonna be fun watching you grow," Jack told me one day, he looked at me across his coffee table that he had made on a dry drunk, and he said, "Work the steps or die." And he said something about my mother. And he got my attention. He just got my attention. And I've been a student of the book and the steps since that day. I was sober about 9 months. When I got sober, I got busy. I was secretary in 2 meetings because I'm busy. I couldn't get drunk on Friday night because I had a Tuesday night meeting at Paid House, back when it was a real place. Paid at 8, you know, on 11th Street. The winos, the first time I took over that meeting, one of my ex-wife Greer, one of Greer's friends, had the meeting, and she didn't want it anymore. And so she said, "You got it." I said, "Okay." And I showed up on Tuesday night, and none of them winos wanted to participate, so I made it a speaker meeting, kept it a year. And then people stacked out the door. It was great. I was secretary. I'm not dumb. I'm alcoholic. I was secretary at meetings where somebody else made the coffee. It was great. It was great. And then Greer and I had this funny deal where I watch people now. See, I just observe people. And I watch them now, but back then, I was 20, you know, 24, 25 years old. I was young, dumb. I had no, just dumb, just dumb. Didn't know much of anything. But I found hope. And that's what I hope you newcomers can find tonight. I found some hope. I found out it's going to be all right. They promised me it was going to be all right as long as I do the deal. And they showed me by their example how to stay sober. They showed me. They didn't tell me shit. They just kept showing me how to do it. And I figured that's my job today. I just got to keep showing them. I got to keep doing it. Because they did it for me. And Greer and I used to split up and go back together. Did that a lot. I had the record in Santa Clara Valley. And a hard record to hold. And we'd see who could play with more of each other's friends while we were split up. And don't let the other one know until it was necessary, you know. Just sick shit. Most people get drunk doing that crap. But I had this commitment in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I guess that's what saved my life. I kind of acted like I was one of God's kids sometimes. And I got to be a convention junkie. In March of 1971, I went to my first convention. The Friday night speaker was my present sponsor, Johnny Harris. And the Saturday night speaker was Chuck Chamberlain, a man that I loved beyond description. And Sunday morning was a black lady named Marion Chapman, and I fell in love with the package. And I hope you newcomers can come to the convention next weekend in San Jose. We have a convention, and we got Borgner's talking, and Scott Redmond's one of the speakers, and Sharon Barker, the best AA lady talking in AA, and a little black lady on Sunday morning, Clara Selden. Clara couldn't hold down a job, didn't know what to do when she got sober, and her sponsor told her, why don't you clean houses? And she put flyers, this is how cool she is, she put flyers out in Beverly Hills. Yeah, this is how, because she'd never been in Beverly Hills. And she put these flyers on mailboxes in Beverly Hills, and today she runs a business that's astronomical, beyond description. It's just amazing stuff, you know. Chuck died in 84. I have a tape of Chuck I've been talking about for a while. I've got a video of Chuck Chamberlain, and it's my prized possession. Just to see the old man, you know. I had the privilege of sitting on the arm of his chair and listening to the music of Alcoholics Anonymous coming from that man. And if you're new or relatively new, and there's a book in the drunk junk stores called New Pair of Glasses. I strongly suggest that's the only kind of, only non-approved AA literature I read. So, I mean, he was an amazing man. He died in Christmas time in 84, and I got the privilege of going to his funeral. And all that time, Jack told me to get a job. You know, in 72, I went to work. 71, I went to work for UPS. And did that deal for a couple of years. They lost the contract. I went to another company, and I learned how to have a work ethic. You know, job was a four-letter word when I got sober. And in 1970, I made $3,000 with 32 W-2 forms. I married Greer because I thought I needed a tax write-off. But swear to God, I all these people in Los Gatos and Saratoga were talking about tax write-offs, all these meetings I'd gone to. And so I thought I needed one. And I married her because she had a kid. And made sense to me until I was sober about 3 or 4 years. I want to explain it to you if you're new. When you make $3,000 in a year legally, you don't need a tax write-off. I just thought I'd lay that on you in case you're thinking about doing what I used to do. You don't need it. You'll get all the money back they took out. It's a great deal. Oh, she's going to write it down. That's deep. Share it with newcomers. They need to hear that stuff, you know. Then I got a job. I worked for Consolidated Freightways. And back then, I don't think Steve hadn't got sobered yet. But I had this gray shirt with a red sign. I had a uniform shirt, but it said Consolidated Freightways on it. And I was my job. Hey, how are you, Jim? I'm fine. See my truck? Got a big set of doubles out there. Do that manly work, you know. That was back when I was tough. And I'm old now. That's what happens when you keep breathing in and out. And I, deep too. You can write that down while you're. But don't forget that one. That's deep. I'd go down to Firestone Tire and I'd take this set of doubles and a big diesel and drive over to Hills and Prudendale and all that stuff. And I'd go down to Firestone and load and unload tires all damn day. That's tough work, man. And hot stuff. And I'd drive back home, you know, and with the fellas, you know, we got four or five sets of doubles coming down the road, you know, and this damn truck I'm driving that couldn't get out of its own way, but we had a good time, and they paid me by the hour, so I didn't care. And I'd punch the old time clock with all the tough guys, and I'd go home and take a bubble bath, you know, just because I learned that in AA, that I could take a bubble bath, just lay there, man, and stop the world for about 20 minutes, you know, and I was fine. And I'd go to another meeting. And then married Pat Miller for a while. Peppermint Patty. She just died. She died 4 years ago in February. Great lady. Great AA lady. She married me because she wanted to be an ex-wife. No shit. I mean, and she knew I could handle it. And she was no big thing. She ain't nothing, you know what I mean? But I married her, paid all her bills off, and she divorced me. And because I thought that was my job, you know. And I came home from work one day, and Monday afternoon, and there's no pots clanking on the stove, no aroma coming out of the kitchen. She said, I want a divorce. I said, why? She said, because I can't be loving and supportive. And I laughed at her. You ain't touched a lick since we got together. What do you mean you can't be supportive? I didn't know nothing. I didn't know nothing about that crap. I didn't want to even delve into 6 and 7 steps. I did shit, so I just moved on. Stayed on Freddie Mata's couch for a minute, you know, and his little baby girl, Liche, they call her. She's a little bitty thing. She comes and wakes me up. I'm on one of those couches you get at Goodwill. And that's a good word. And she comes with peanut butter all over my glasses. This is 1974. And got peanut. I said, I got to move. And Jack said, move into our house. He was moving to Seattle. I moved into his house. And that's where I learned to live with me. First time in my life. I couldn't move her in because I was living in his house. And I was there for a year and a half before I went down to Monterey. And got transferred to Salinas and lived in Pacific Grove for 6 years. Yeah, 6 years. And great town and great country. And I got a lot of friends down there. And got married again down there. Found the ice woman. We got married for a little while. I was president of our corporation, and that's when Jamama was happening. And she liked being married to a corporate president. According to all the paperwork, I'm supposed to be making a lot of money today, you know. And, 20 years later or whatever, 50 or 15 years later. And I got embezzled in business and divorced, silly me. And she didn't want to be married to a truck driver, so hurt me deeply. And so I ended up moving back to San Jose with my boy. I got custody of Kevin. He was about 12 then, and 14. And he, I look over Val getting him. Sorry. I was almost daddy, you know, if it was up to him. She was smarter than him. Did I say that? Anyway. I had my little boy, and Pat said, she said that a counselor that if I put my son in a foster home, we could stay married. And I came that close to doing it. That's how close I was to being drunk. That close. Because if I had done it, I'm sure I couldn't have lived with it. You know, and so me and my little boy moved on and moved back up here. Went to work driving a concrete truck and did that until 1995, when I rolled one. I had a blowout at 60 or 55 miles an hour. That'll get you next to Jesus. 62,000 pounds of truck. And in the meantime, in 91, I got leukemia for the first time and went into the hospital with a brown recluse spider bite. 5 days later, found out I had leukemia and came up here from Southern California. I was down at a convention in San Diego when I got bit in a hotel. And I came back up here to Kaiser Santa Clara and started that dumb bitch. A couple of you here were with me then. See, I've never left Alcoholics Anonymous. 29 years, 7 months, 2 weeks, 2 days. I have left Alcoholics Anonymous because I love it here. I'm safe. I'm safe. And if you're new here, I want you to be safe. You know, be safe here. It's a safe place to stay. So I got this damn leukemia, and I went in at 280 pounds. 3 weeks later, I made the doctor let me out because Johnny Harris was talking at my sponsor was talking at the birthday meeting, and I wanted to get my 21-year medallion. So I made my doctor let me out of the hospital. I weighed 140 pounds, and I was in a wheelchair, couldn't hold my head up. And I was supposed to die according to them. What do they know? And that's when this guy took over my loan and didn't make a payment and gutted the house. The bank finally foreclosed in 93 on my credit. And morally, he owes me $125. Legally, he owes me nothing because my power of attorney died with everything in his head. And every now and then I have a resentment. I'm always willing for that piece of crap to come up and give me a cashier's check. I don't judge. But it's got to happen. No shit, God. Anyway, I moved right along, and I got well. I went back to work, and in 95, I rolled a truck. And, and was took him 45 minutes to cut me out of the truck. But the good news was I blocked traffic for 3 hours on 880 that day. North and south. North and south. Hot Saturday afternoon. And that was my favorite part of that job, driving a concrete truck was blocking traffic. I just love I just get a woody blocking traffic. It was just kind of spiritual. And there's people wave hand signals at me like, you know, you're number one with me. I think that's what they were saying. I didn't pay much attention to them. And I went on and on and on. In 96, I got leukemia again. In January 96, I married Stephanie, the only woman I've ever loved in my life. Could take a bullet for her today. And we got married in January 6th of 96. The guys I sponsor sent us down to Disneyland with Goofy and his friends. And we had a great time. We went to a Monday night meeting at the Big Book Group in Bellflower, my sponsor's home group, because he told me to. And she wasn't too tickled about going to an AA meeting on her honeymoon. She'd never done that before. Together we've been married 10 times. We're a perfect, or 5 times. 5 times each, we're a perfect 10. And I told her on Wednesday morning, I said, oh, by the way, Jen wants me to meet him at the Pacific Group. You do everything he tells you, yes. One of the reasons I'm single. I'll still do what he tells me because he knows more than I do. He's sober 10 years longer than I am. He's always been sober 10 years longer than me ever since I met him. And that's what I respect about the man. I trust him with my life. I've had 9 sponsors in 29 years. And it's been reasons of death if they're moving. Ole Olson moved in 15 years ago when he moved up to Sonora. And I was looking around. Jim Riley was going to sponsor me, and he died. He came down with bone cancer and died in 3 months. And I asked Johnny to sponsor me, and it's been a great relationship for 15 years. He's cruel. In March of 96, I came down with leukemia again. Stephanie and I never did have a good time. I was supposed to be president. I was supposed to have been gone public with the company and blah, blah, blah. And I've been financially short with her since we've been together. But we've made it. And January 1st, New Year's Day, I told her she could have her divorce. Because she's been threatening me with it for 4 years. And so I just said, you can have your goddamn divorce. And I laid in the fetal position all day in that bed. I didn't leave the bed. Except to go to the bathroom, because I do that now. I didn't used to do that. But I laid in a fetal position with the blanket turned up to mother all day long, crying. And my world's turning to shit. And I really don't deserve this one, God. And I was mad at God for a few hours. 4 o'clock that afternoon, it dawned on me I got to speak in my home group, the Second Tradition Group. We meet at Fruitdale and Meridian on Saturday night, Calvin Presbyterian Church. It's the best party in 3 counties. You ought to join us. It dawned on me at 4 o'clock that I'm the speaker that night. So I got in the shower, put my suit on. I think it was a suit. Just got out of the cleaners. Anyway, I was a speaker that night. 11 days later, I left. And we have a decent relationship now. Her sponsor told her the first smart thing she told her in 4 years and 5 years. And that's pay me the money she owes me. I think it's a good idea. We have a 3-year-old grandson that's a joy to my life. His name is Dante. I'll tell you if you ask. I'm Dante. And he doesn't have any fear. He loves his grandpa. I'm his favorite. I'm his only one, but I'm his favorite grandpa. And he loves grandma, but he loves me more. I'm not his blood grandpa, but I'm his only one, and I adore that baby. I just bought him another little Volkswagen. More cars. Took him to the fair last week. Got no fear. Just great. From a drunken, puking, stumbling dope fiend that came to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, almost 30 years later, I could stand up here and clean of breath, had dinner with 4 men that I love, 3 other men that I love. just tell you the thing works real good. You know, I'm 4 years out of bone marrow transplant. But that good dead guy. So every day is great. Every day I wake up above grass, I'm good. Yeah. It's another one. Came up to the day when I kind of had to, some of you don't understand, I booked in the Lonely's this morning. So I went and spent $800 that I don't have. What the hell? No. Give me credit. And looking good when I get my tailor top, you know. Going to Minneapolis, then I got to go to Toronto for a week. It's a tough life. All expenses paid. Then I'm going to go down to D.C. I'm going to speak at a meeting at the White House. Gee. They don't know what's coming. You know? My life is good. I'll be done by 10. But I'm glad that Mark asked me to talk tonight and didn't show up. I will read him. I'm glad you all were here. Thank you.